Engaging conversation on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Hello and welcome to Pro-Life Primetime News. Today is Friday, May 3rd. I'm Leslie Palma. Vice President Kamala Harris flew to Florida Tuesday aboard Air Force Two to speak out against a newly enacted law that protects babies with beating hearts. Priests for Life National Director Frank Pavone had a different reaction. I'll have that in my top story, as well as an interview with Ohio pro-life leader Mark Harrington with advice for states like Florida that have pro-abortion amendments on the November ballot. The Arizona legislature passed and Governor Katie Hobbs signed a bill repealing a law that protects most babies from abortion. Two Republican senators broke with their party to support the bill. But there was better news in Kansas. I'll report all the abortion news, good and bad, in my second segment. Making good use of a day off from his trial in New York, former President Donald Trump took to the campaign trail Wednesday, holding rallies in Wisconsin and Michigan, two key battleground states. I'll have that and more election news and political news in a nutshell. The Silent No More Awareness Campaign is celebrating its 20th anniversary in Canada. National Coordinator Angelina Steenstra has been at the helm since the beginning. My closing segment will have more on this labor of love. Please stay tuned. Vice President Kamala Harris swooped into Jacksonville aboard Air Force Two on Wednesday to confront what she described as a, quote, horrific reality, the enactment of a law protecting babies with beating hearts from abortion. Across our nation, we witness a full-on assault, state by state, on reproductive freedom, Harris told a group of abortion enthusiasts. Meanwhile, the mainstream media was awash in grief over the new law. Tears and despair at Florida abortion clinic, screamed a headline in the Washington Post. How far will Florida women have to travel for an abortion now, asked the Independent. The Democratic National Committee flew a banner over Mar-a-Lago, President Donald Trump's residence in Palm Beach, putting the blame for the new law, or the credit, as we see it here, on the former president. Pro-life leaders and activists, however, were thrilled with the new protections in Florida. So how did Priests for Life National Director Frank Pavone greet the new day in the state our ministry calls home? Let's have a look.
Brother Frank, what are you doing?
This is a great day. Florida today protects the unborn more than it has in the last 50 years because today the Heartbeat Protection Act has gone into effect. God bless Florida. I kiss the ground as a sign of respect and gratitude for this new protection.
Florida's heartbeat bill, signed into law by Governor Ron DeSantis over a year ago, was enacted after beating back legal challenges filed by abortion profiteers. The Sunshine State now joins 15 other states in offering significant protections to the unborn. The new law means babies at about 6 weeks gestation can remain safely in their mother's wombs, at least in Florida and in much of the South. Florida moms determined to end their pregnancies after that point will have to travel to North Carolina if the pregnancy is still in the first trimester, or farther in the second trimester and beyond, to Illinois, New Jersey, or one of the other abortion-friendly states. But the preborn in Florida might not be safe for long. When the state Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of the heartbeat bill, it also cleared the way for abortion advocates to try to pass a proposed amendment that would invent a right to abortion in the state constitution. Florida is one of at least 11 states that likely will put a pro-abortion amendment before voters in November. Several states already have passed such amendments. Ohio is one of them. Pro-life leaders in and out of the state worked hard to defeat the amendment, but it passed last November with a 57% majority. Mark Harrington, the founder and president of Columbus, Ohio-based Created Equal, was among those leading the effort to defeat the amendment. He joins me now to talk about how Ohio's experience can help pro-lifers in Florida and the other states where life is on the ballot. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Great to be here.
So, Mark, tell us what happened in Ohio and why you think the amendment passed.
Well, now there's been seven of these constitutional amendments, Michigan and Ohio being, I guess, the most important because they were direct attempts to expand abortion up to the very moment of birth. I don't know if we can count California, Vermont in those amendments because abortion was already legal up to the very moment of birth in those states. But I think Michigan and Ohio were really wake-up calls to the pro-life movement. And I think a couple of things we can take away from the Ohio battle. And number one for me is that we've overturned Roe versus Wade, but we have not overturned abortion. And public opinion still supports abortion. About 6 out of 10 Americans believe abortion should be legal in the first trimester of pregnancy. And those numbers kind of played out in Ohio and Michigan. 57% of Ohioans and Michigan citizens, voters, voted in favor of the abortion amendment. So we have a lot of work to do in order to change the culture, and we need to get back to the business of doing that. I mean, there's a lot of other lessons learned. I would say a lot of people want to look at how badly we were outspent. That's going to be the case in every one of these constitutional amendments. Right. Obviously, it's a problem. We have to close that gap, the funding gap between us and our opposition, but we're never going to raise as much money as them. We have to be much more efficient and smarter with our money. I call it lean and mean, right? Mm-hmm. And just use our money more effectively in the ads that we're running. And I think the bigger thing is that we need to, we can't expect a different result if we continue doing the same messaging. So we've got to change the messaging. And some of the things that came out of Ohio give us a pathway forward in these other states as far as the media ads and the messaging and what worked and what didn't.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard you describe a tool that you are offering to other states. Can you tell me what you're willing to do to help other states?
Yeah, so we created a volunteer portal for the door-to-door grassroots effort, the phone banking as well. So we ran the entire volunteer grassroots effort here in Ohio, and we're making that available to all the other states that are facing these constitutional amendments. Several of those have already taken us up on our offer. We've got it going on in Nevada, Arizona, Missouri, hopefully Florida soon. Again, this is just a way to organize your volunteers in order to be efficient in reaching and knocking on doors and making phone calls and all the other stuff. So it's a one-stop shop for volunteers to be kept up on what's going on, given information, and just trying to streamline the communication between the coalition and their volunteers. So if people are interested in that, they can just email me at createdequal.org.
Okay, great. So in Florida specifically, we are voting on not only the abortion amendment, but also legalizing marijuana. So they're expecting a huge voter turnout among young people. What kind of message can we use to get to the young people?
Well, that's a tough one because in Ohio, we lost the Gen Z voters pretty badly here. 18 to 29-year-olds, 77% voted yes on issue one. And so we have an uphill battle there. There are indications, though, if you look at the polling regarding the presidential race, that Donald Trump is polling better with that group than he was in 2020. So we can only hope that that's going to carry over into the abortion battle there in Florida. Honestly, we did not devote a lot of our resources to the college age and career age young people because that's just not the people that we're going to be switching over or changing. We're trying to reach the persuadables. Those are the people in the middle. They're marginally pro-choice or they really don't have a hard and fast position on this. So we suspended our college outreach actually during issue one, the campaign. That doesn't mean we give up on them, but there's a lot of other people that are going to be more persuadable than that demographic, in my opinion.
Oh, interesting, interesting. So the other side these amendments, all of them seem to be very vague and they open to lots of different interpretation. How can we let people know that they're being hoodwinked?
Well, yeah, I was looking at the language here in the state of Florida. They say that the amendment provides that no law shall prohibit or penalize, delay, or restrict abortion after viability. Vague term. Of course, we all know viability supposedly means that the baby can survive outside the womb. But that term is up to the determination of whom? The doctor or the abortionist, right? And even Warren Hearn recently in the Atlantic magazine said viability is really up to what the mom wants. If she wants the baby, then the baby's viable. If she doesn't, then he's not. So, it's one of those terms that you could drive a Mack truck through. It's not defined in the amendment. Nor is the term health, patient's health, healthcare provider. This is very similar to all of the amendments across the country. They are intentionally vague for a reason because they don't want to limit the amendment. They want it to pass and then leave the courts to interpret what these words mean in the future. And we know what that leads to, right? We saw that with Roe versus Wade and determining that health could be anything from familial health, emotional health, psychological health, not just physical health. So there's a lot of intentional, you know, they're being vague intentionally in order to get the amendment passed.
Yep. So in Florida, we have to pass it with a 60% vote. And now you mentioned Michigan and Ohio passed with 57%. So does that give us cause for optimism here in Florida?
Well, I think so. I saw recently a poll by Ipsos, which was published in USA Today, that showed that 58% of Floridians would vote yes. The bottom line is this: you got to keep it under 60, right? That's all you got to do. Yeah. You don't have to get it to 50 or 55. That'd be nice. But mm-hmm. if you keep it under 60, you win. And our polling pretty much from the beginning to the end stayed around 56, 57%. So I think you have a fair shot at it there in the state. Florida's a little different than Ohio in some ways. I think you have certain things going for you, especially your governor, where we didn't with our governor. He wasn't very outspoken. And when he did, the ads that he ran were awful, didn't perform very well. With your state, you have Ron DeSantis, who is an outspoken pro-life advocate, and he's very articulate on the issue. It's a it's just a core issue for him, and I think that's a big difference for you guys. Demographically, your state is gigantic in comparison to Ohio. It is a battleground for the presidential race, so all these things should work in your advantage. So we're very hopeful in Florida coming this year.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And I hope you'll pray for us here in Florida and the other states facing the same thing.
Well, you got an uphill battle now that your heartbeat bill is passed. I mean, that's a good thing. Children are going to be spared from abortion, but they're going to try to use that against you there, as they did here in Ohio, by saying Absolutely. That a vote yes would ban or would repeal the extreme 6-week abortion ban. So you got to be prepared for these ads are going to be coming your way pretty soon.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mark.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Two Republicans in the Arizona Senate sided with Democrats on Wednesday to deliver enough votes to repeal a pro-life law from 1864 that protects most babies from abortion. The Arizona Supreme Court upheld the law 2 weeks ago, but Democrats in the state, led by Governor Katie Hobbs and Attorney General Chris Mays, made repealing the law a priority. Abortion now remains legal in Arizona through the 15th week. On Monday, the Kansas Senate followed the lead of the House in voting to override Governor Laura Kelly's veto of several abortion bills. It will now become a felony in Kansas to force a woman to have an abortion, and abortionists soon will have to ask mothers if the pregnancy they want to abort is the result of rape or incest, and whether they have an abusive partner. Abortion advocates like the governor call the questions overly intrusive and potentially traumatizing, but the Kansas House leadership in a statement said the governor's unreasonable fear of this data collection is nothing but a roadblock to helping serve these vulnerable women better. A bill proposed in the Louisiana Senate would add the chemical abortion drugs mifepristone and misoprostol to the list of controlled dangerous substances in the state. Under current law, it is a crime in Louisiana to provide an abortion, including by giving someone abortion pills. The new bill also would criminalize possessing the pills without a prescription under the state's Uniform Controlled Dangerous Substances Act, and it would outlaw a procedure known as advance provision, in which women order pills online in case they get pregnant in the future. The bill would allow the drugs to be used for treatment of miscarriage and other non-abortion procedures. Meanwhile, an Obama-appointed federal judge in North Carolina has ruled that some of the state's laws on dispensing abortion pills are unlawful. U.S. District Judge Catherine Eagles found that a law requiring doctors to prescribe and provide the deadly drugs in person went further than regulations promulgated by the Federal Food and Drug Administration. But Eagles also ruled that a law requiring a mother to meet in person with an abortionist 72 hours before starting a chemical abortion, as well as laws mandating an in-person examination and ultrasound, can remain in force. Compass Care, Heartbeat International, and 10 other pro-life pregnancy centers have filed a lawsuit against New York Attorney General Letitia James in an effort to stop her from making it illegal for the centers to tell women about abortion pill reversal, which can halt a chemical abortion after the first pill has been taken. The suit, filed in state Supreme Court in Rochester, alleges that James is intentionally and maliciously using her office to restrict the constitutional and civil rights of pro-lifers. The Thomas More Society is representing the pro-life centers in the suit. Pope Francis's top diplomat said the European Parliament's effort to promote abortion as a fundamental right constitutes a radical attack on human life. When life is attacked in such a radical way, you truly have to ask what kind of future we want to build, said Italian Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Vatican's Secretary of State. He said the situation has produced great sadness in the depths of my heart. Abortion is expected to be a significant issue as the European Parliament opens elections in June. And finally, 500 baby sea turtles that washed up on beaches in Cape Town, South Africa, after powerful storms in the Indian Ocean, were rescued by members of the public and taken to an aquarium where they will be rehabilitated at a cost of about $500 per turtle. In contrast, more than 2,500 preborn babies lost their lives to abortion today, just today, in the United States, with many of those abortions funded by taxpayer dollars. But you won't read stories about this truly horrific reality because it's just another day in America. And increasingly, those who try to rescue the unborn are finding themselves behind bars. And that's abortion in the news. Former President Donald Trump had a day off from his trial in New York on Wednesday, so he took advantage of the opportunity to spend some time on the campaign trail, holding rallies in Wisconsin and Michigan, two key battleground states. In Freeland, Michigan, Trump spoke at length about abortion, saying he believes the regulation of abortion belongs to individual states. He said the political reality is that lawmakers will have to allow some exceptions in order to be elected by a populace that is much more tuned into the abortion issue than it used to be. But he also stressed that Democrats are the real radicals on abortion because they want no limits on the procedure. We're not going to allow it, he said. Also this week, in a wide-ranging interview with Time magazine about a possible second term, Trump said he doesn't expect a national ban on abortion to reach the Oval Office because it would never win the 60 votes needed from the Senate. Throughout the abortion discussion, Trump remained adamant that the overturning of Roe v. Wade in 2022 left regulation of abortion up to the states. He also said he will have a major announcement regarding the abortion drug mifepristone in the next few weeks. The way the drug is distributed and how late into pregnancy it may be prescribed are questions the U.S. Supreme Court is expected to address in an opinion expected next month. A pro-abortion Democrat won a special election in New York this week for a seat in the U.S. House left vacant when Democrat Brian Higgins resigned in February. State Senator Tim Kennedy will represent an upstate New York district that includes Buffalo and Niagara Falls. Kennedy beat Republican Gary Dixon, the town supervisor in West Seneca, New York. When Kennedy is sworn in, House Republicans will hold 217 seats and Democrats will have 213 seats, with 5 seats remaining vacant. Kennedy will have to defend his new job at a primary in June and the general election in November. Republican Representative Bill Posey, whose Central Florida district includes Priests for Life headquarters in Titusville, last Friday became the latest member of Congress to announce his retirement. Posey then quickly threw his support for Florida Senator President Mike Haridopoulos, a Republican, for the District 8 seat. Haridopoulos filed his paperwork just before the noon deadline last Friday. The Constitution Party has named pro-life activist Randall Terry, the one-time president of Operation Rescue, as its nominee for president. We are running for president in an effort to make child killing by abortion the number one voter issue in America, Terry says on his campaign website. We will show the horror of aborted children to the American people and call on Christians to repent for having voted for Joe Biden. Another pro-life activist, Teresa Bukovnik, the founder and former director of Pro-Life San Francisco, is running for the Democratic nomination for president. Both candidacies are considered long shots. The Wall Street Journal is calling the 26% of likely voters who haven't yet made up their minds about the presidential election the persuadables and says they may well decide the election. Here's what we know about them. According to the Journal, 39% describes themselves as moderates, and only 11% think the country is headed in the right direction. 70% have an unfavorable view of Joe Biden, while 74% don't much like Trump. Two-thirds of the persuadables say the economy has gotten worse under Biden, and the majority also is in favor of legal abortion. That's political news in a nutshell. The National March for Life in Canada will take place on Thursday, May 9th, and women and men of the Silent No More Awareness campaign once again will stand on the steps of Parliament Hill in Ottawa to talk about their abortion regret. This year, the campaign is celebrating 20 years since it was established in Canada, our abortion-friendly neighbor to the north. Angelina Steenstra has served as national coordinator since 2004, but it was a year earlier that she first gave her testimony as part of the National March. Suffering in silence from an abortion she had as a teenager, In 1991, she began working with a priest in the Diocese of Toronto who was developing a program for healing after abortion. She began to receive invitations to speak at churches and other religious venues, and in 2003, she was asked to address the Canada March for Life about a date rape when she was a teenager, her covert journey to New York, and the abortion that would impact the rest of her life. "I got up there at Parliament Hill in Ottawa, and it was daunting," Angelina told me, "but I prayed, and I was given a grace, and I did it." Jim Hughes, then the head of Campaign Life Coalition, asked Angelina to bring Silent No More to Canada. But before deciding, she and her husband Walter traveled to Washington, D.C. in January 2004 for the annual March for Life there to see Silent No More in action. Its co-founders, Priests for Life Executive Director Janet Morana and Anglicans for Life President Georgette Forney, asked Angelina to give her testimony in front of the steps of the Supreme Court. "It was not about me anymore," Angelina said. "I became about all the women and men living in the bondage of silence." 4 months later, on May 13, 2004, she led the first Silent No More gathering as part of the March for Life Canada. 12 women told the stories of their abortions and the many ways they were harmed by making that choice. "It was a profound moment for Canada," Angelina recalled. "People have often said to us, 'You're the most important part of this day.'" To recognize Silent No More's contribution to pro-life efforts in Canada, where abortion has no limits and is paid for by the government, the Campaign Life Coalition has designated this year's march in honor of Angelina and Walter. And as she has for most of the last 20 years, Janet Morana will make the trip to Ottawa next week. She noted that the theme this year is "I Will Never Forget You," perfect for Silent No More. "Mothers and fathers never forget the babies they lost to abortion," Janet said, "and for many of them, the best way to commemorate those lives lost is to be silent no more." Thank you so much for joining me on Pro-Life Primetime News, produced at Priests for Life headquarters in Titusville, Florida. If you like this show, please consider making a donation to prolifegift.org. These donations help fund all of our work here at Priests for Life, which enables us to continue educating, equipping, and activating God's people to end abortion. For all your pro-life news updates during the week, please follow us on X at Pro-Life News Show. And please make sure to tune into our other shows like Just Ask Janet and Praying for America. Go to endabortion.tv for the schedule. I'm Leslie Palma, Communications Director. Remember, life is the only choice.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.